interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-challenged, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 598. Remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed because you really don't know what you miss until you get behind the woodshed. It's pretty much that simple. I keep saying it like that because that's really much how it works. You just can't sit listening to me, find something that actually irks you enough to take action, and you'll start finding out how little you know, and then actually you have to be wary that you, what you know might be right, but the other side isn't going to give it to you. So you got to come up with some tricks and the tips I try to bring you behind the woodshed to show you what you need to tell them. And a lot of this is staying ahead of the game and not getting behind it. Things might not be so free on the internet with website obstructions, and here's one again. As we keep I'm thinking here as I'm breaking into this broadcast, how much digital nonsense I read going on in the world, how much these things are going on past us, and the information sits there for us to see where they are taking all this. I'm going to read from an Atlantic article here that I copied before it got blocked me out. And this is the other thing about the censorship and where companies and websites to go to. Some things are free and sometimes aren't. So you got to keep looking until you find it. But I will have for you the nature.com article where, for the reference entitled, Human Embryo Models Are Getting More Realistic, Raising Ethical Questions. But where I found this was the Atlantic. And it says, they were made without eggs or sperm. Are they human? Embryo models are getting remarkably realistic. The little clump of cells looked almost like a human embryo, created from stem cells without eggs, sperm, or womb. The embryo model had a yolk sac, and a protoplacenta, resembling a state that real human embryos reach after approximately 14 days of development. It even secreted hormones that turned a drugstore pregnancy test positive. To Jacob Hanna's expert eye, the model wasn't perfect, more like a rough sketch. It had no chance of developing into an actual baby, but in 2022, when two students burst into his office and dragged him to a microscope to show him the cluster of cells, he knew his team had unlocked a door to understanding a crucial stage of human development. Hanna, a professor at Weizmann Institute of Science in Israel, also knew that the model would raise some profound ethical questions. I was interject on that. Ethical from Israel? Really? But anyway, they're thinking about it. Embryo models, that is, embryos created using stem cells, could provide a real alternative for studying some of the hardest problems in human development, unlocking crucial details about, say, what causes miscarriages and developmental disorders. In recent years, Hanna and other scientists had made remarkable progress in cultivating pluripotent stem cells to mimic the structure and function of a real growing embryo. But as researchers solve technical problems, they are still left with moral ones. When is a copy so good that it's equivalent to the real thing? And more to the point, when should the lab experiment be treated legally and ethically as human? So I'll let you get the link here to Blogcaster or try to track down that article. It goes on for a long ways, and then the link I'll give you is more of a study issue. But you can read more on the topic and its challenging consequences regarding those sustainable future generations as you start applying what they're telling us here to what's going on. And maybe ask yourself, considering humans are animals, what is a humanist's morality in determining the future that they want for you? Not you, those to come, the future generations. The humanist is going to determine, or the rancher, so to speak. So what kind of ethics are you going to expect from that? And until they finally get that worked out to replace people, your little ones need to be removed from these sociopaths in training. Texas, police investigating teachers giving sleepy stickers to very young children. Parents of preschool students at a Spring ISD elementary school said two teachers have been giving their children sleeping aids. They said their children told them they were giving sleepy stickers that would make them fall asleep. An email from Northgate Crossing Elementary School principal on Tuesday said two staff members were put on leave after allegedly providing sleepy supplements to students. The email also said the Spring ISD Police Department is also investigating. The sticker makes me fall asleep, 4-year-old Lane Laviano said. Lane broke the case open in September when she snuck one of the stickers home. Lisa Laviano, Lane's mother, said the sticker was suspicious and she immediately started doing some research online. She quickly found that the sleeping patches were sold on Amazon. Disclaimer, this is not a promotion. Don't go there. Anyway, the patches are for adults and contain melatonin and other ingredients. Lisa said she took what she found to the school, but said other parents were never notified, even after she told administrators that Lane said other students were getting the stickers too. That's when Lisa took matters into her own hands and started contacting other parents, advising them to speak with their children, their little ones, little goats, the state's wards. However, very much so, you got to roll your sleeves up, and you have to get involved. You have to take action, because they're not going to do it for you. But don't be lulled to rest sleep just because you think you've told big tech no. A study reveals Google tracks location even with GPS disabled. Cyber News research team has unraveled a silent tracking system on Google Pixel devices that sends user data without their consent. According to these research findings, Google has a secretive stream of data that it continually sends to its servers even without the user's consent. The team took a brand new Pixel 9 Pro XL device with default settings and a new Google account and then rooted it to add a man-in-the-middle interception layer. The team proxied the inbound and outbound traffic to use a custom security certificate to decrypt and examine the communications. However, since the phone was rooted, the intercepted data was incomplete because some features were disabled. Even when the location and GPS were disabled, the device tracked the estimated location through Wi-Fi networks. It may have been necessary to run certain new services like crash detection, but the key word concerning the masses is transparency. Quote, you can't say no to Google surveillance, close quote, says the Cyber News team conclusion, adding, the phone periodically attempts to download and run new code, potentially opening up security risks. The shocking revelation through decrypted data shows, quote, every 15 minutes, the Pixel 9 Pro XL sends a data packet to Google. The devices share location, emailed address, phone number, network status, and other telemetry to multiple endpoints at Google, including device management, policy enforcement, and face grouping. So I believe I've reported long ago that the phones were tracking by inertial reference using the sensors in the phone and then used any Wi-Fi and some using Bluetooth to phone home with this tracking data. And we talked about that Bluetooth, that second generation Bluetooth is actually allows a greater distance to contact other similar types of Bluetooth that can resend the data, and it works through an established private mesh network that's established by Bluetooth against the lack of reception otherwise. Now we hear it isn't limited to tracking location, as in this article you read it. It would imply turning off GPSs for your deceived peace of mind, not a limitation to Google in any regard. And it's really a thing here to de-Google your phone or get a de-Googled phone and put up with any small hardships that Google services, so-called, provide at your expense. You know, they're servicing, but it's servicing Google at your expense. And again, you become that product, but you also are trackable. We talked all about this technology before, finding out where you are relative to Wi-Fi or Bluetooth, and they can use multiple devices to figure out pretty much, and they say that estimate, but it's pretty close to where you actually are if you're carrying that phone around. But I do like the idea of adding a layer to the phone to be your own man-in-the-middle monitor for what the phone is doing. That might not be necessary in a de-Google phone, as you heard. Some Google features could not be monitored being unavailable in a rooted phone, but the reason for rooting the phone, even so, the layer would be there to monitor for hacks as well. Anything that's trying to come through, it would actually look at I dare say an AI, if you will, a machine language system could be put into that later to really look at what's going on and get, and send reports when it looks at, finds something. That to me would be a nice feature. I would say work to de-Google to escape those refusing to don't be evil in this matter. And it's going to be tougher and tougher as we've been talking all these years about how this is coming down on us. But it doesn't end with Google wherever there is a buck to be made as you become the product more and more in the digital Hadescape. PayPal's secret data grab banks on users staying blissfully unaware. That's the whole point behind Woodshed. Stop being unaware. Find out where you don't know and learn about it. You don't have to be an expert to understand when something's coming against you and it's wrong. And then I've showed you how simple it can be to stop it. But here we have PayPal and a secret data grab. As things stand, data belonging to PayPal users will quietly, this is without their knowledge or consent, start to be used by third parties. The reports explain that the secret opt-in is explained in the settings for the personalized shopping page. Those who happen to make it to that page could learn that this is more personalized experience can be opted out. The plan is to start data sharing in the early summer of next year, and at one point, the same page said that after this November, PayPal will be using information collected about users to personalize your shopping. Moreover, 404 Media says this line was gone after they contacted PayPal on Monday. As of Tuesday, the situation around transparency remained the same. The only way for users to find out what's coming is to unprompted come across the page where they can opt out of allowing PayPal to share products, offers, and rewards you might like with participating stores, aka those third parties. What opting out gets users is PayPal continuing to disclose their personal information as necessary to complete transactions you initiate, but will not disclose personal information to partners and merchant for personalized shopping experiences. The data that does reach partners and merchants is then at the mercy of their own individual privacy policies. As of Tuesday, PayPal had no answer to 404 Media questions whether customers would be directly notified before November 27th that the company plans to share their data with third-party partners and merchants, and what happens to the user's data if they opt out after that date. Looks like PayPal is literally and figuratively banking on users addicted to convenience and on them rather than not knowing how the convenience sausage gets made. And so I bring this up as a warning. You can start looking around for that opt-out. It looks like, as I've been telling you, they don't make it easy, so you have to really be diligent for it. I have to say that because we're asking our donations go through PayPal at this point. And so these are the new knowledges that we get. As we start seeing this happen, we have to shift around to try and find alternative ways to donate. At this time, we haven't looked. I hadn't seen this story up until this week. But this is where the major companies seem to be going. I will say we've had a couple of generous donations, and thank you very, very much. Like I said, we'll be able to make quite a salsa with this these last donations that we did get through the ko.fi address that I talked about last week. And I think it might be fine on the link in that Sound Minds provides for all the syndication channels. Find that ko.fi address. I won't say it again. I said it three times last episode. And please donate what you can for a cup of coffee, or as we had send in, it was apparently super simple to go through that website to get a payment to get the payment through. And so I really appreciate having that option now as we see this coming up. And like I said, as we can move this along, we're attempting always to stay ahead of what's going on. We see this, we'll be looking possibly to look for an alternative. They're scarce, and so it's not so easy. So those of you that can, please donate to our ko.fi address and give the crew a cup of coffee, ko.fi. So this is what's going on. This is how hard this is to keep ahead, and it takes a lot of time to figure things out as we, again, trying to make unstoppable media, ways to still do things. We're back to the Matrix is not a movie, and we're in the sewers, and so we have to move around, apparently, and we're going to try, again, that app I keep talking about, we're not there yet, but that app will make it very simple, I think, to move things quickly. And that will be, I think, an advantage where the listener chooses what they want, and then Real Liberty Media provides how they get there. And hopefully very seamlessly, very, very simply. Also, something not too convenient, as we hear all these conveniences coming down to grab us. Robo vacuum cleaners turn racist after hack attack from ABC. I want to highlight this. This is off the RT website that's quoting ABC, Hillary Clinton. Go take a look. They're giving American News a cover on their website, Russia Today. Owners of robotic vacuum cleaners in several U.S. cities have reported their devices being hacked, causing the appliances to shout out obscenities, according to ABC News report on Thursday. A Minnesota lawyer named Daniel Swenson told the outlet that he was watching TV when his Chinese-made EcoVax D-Bot X2 started to malfunction. He said the noise coming from the robot, also known as a Roomba, initially sounded like a broken-up radio signal with brief snippets of what sounded like a voice. After seeing that the stranger had connected to the robot and was accessing its remote control feature, Swenson said he dismissed it as a glitch and rebooted the vacuum cleaner. However, shortly afterwards, it started moving again and this time yelled racist obscenities through the speaker, saying F asterisk, N asterisk, 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 S, over and over again. Quote, I got the impression it was a kid, maybe a teenager, speaking. Swenson told the outlet, suggesting that maybe they were just jumping from device to device, messing with families. According to ABC, several similar hacking incidents have been reported in recent months across the United States. In May, a hacked D-Bot X2 vacuum cleaner in Los Angeles was reported to have chased its owner's dog around the house, apparently being steered remotely while swearing through its speakers. Prior to these incidents, ABC said security researchers had tried to notify EcoVax of significant flaws in the vacuum cleaners and the app that is used to control them. Specifically, they flagged the robot's Bluetooth controllers and PIN code system protecting the video feed and remote control feature. Cybersecurity experts have claimed that the four-digit PIN protecting the device could be easily bypassed because it was only being checked by the app and not the server or the robot. EcoVax has confirmed the account of Daniel Swenson since he filed the complaint. However, the company has suggested the incident was due to an unauthorized person accessing Swenson's account and password, and not because EcoVax's own system had been breached. Nevertheless, the manufacturer has said it will issue a security upgrade for the owners of the X2 series of robot vacuum cleaners in November. I guess November's going to be a big year, a big month this year. We'll see. I think it's a really big month this year. We will see. So, not very convenient, but there it is. And remember, those robots, those Roombas, they actually have the ability to map your place. And so, understand, when they hack that, when someone hacks that, they can get that data, I'm sure. There's nothing that's not available to someone who knows what's going on. Talk about being able to place you in the room. Once they know the room and then they can type into your other Wi-Fi, they can figure out where you are. Now, whether or not you feel that's a threat or not is up to you, but I don't think I would like to have someone be able to anticipate what room I might be in and not know that they don't like me for some reason. And then we're in the drone wars, aren't we? But hoovering up every last bit of free speech, we heard last episode tied at the hypocrite with the treasonous global organized criminals, and as climate czar Kerry said, the First Amendment is an obstacle to hammering out any free speech opposition. They now doubled down with his comrade in arms towards the Siberian gulag, as Hillary Clinton says, either crack down on social media or we lose total control. Certainly we is not you and me, my listener. We lose total control. Former First Lady, Secretary of State and presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has called on social media companies to ramp up the moderation and monitoring of content on their platforms if the powers that be want to maintain control of the information space. Yet another treasonous Secretary of State of the United States right here, who carries the same thing. Look at Blinken. Where did the statesmen go in this country? I don't even know. There should be lots of things done. We should be, in my view, Hillary Clinton's view, repealing something called Section 230 of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which gave, platforms on the Internet immunity because they were thought to be just pass-throughs, that they shouldn't be judged for the content that is posted, Clinton said in a surprisingly frank interview with CNN on Saturday while promoting her new book. So she gets to freely speak through her books, but she doesn't want you to be able to criticize her book on social media, it seemed to me. Quote, but we now know that there was an overly simple view that if the platforms, whether it's Facebook, Plant, or Tech, Twitter, X, or Instagram, or TikTok, whatever they are, if they don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose control. And it's not just the social and psychological effects, it's real harm. It's child porn and threats of violence. Things that are terribly dangerous, Clinton said. And she should know with her husband. And I remember, Epstein didn't kill himself either. This is the second time in less than a month that Clinton has appeared on television to address the political impact of online content. Last month, she told MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, is that a typo, Maddow, that Americans engaged in the spread of so-called Russian propaganda in support of Donald Trump during the 2016 race should be civilly or even in some cases criminally charged. And yet she was never charged for her indiscretions while she mentioned those against Trump were debunked. How does that play out, too? Well, it didn't play out very well. You see where it led to. Now we see these words called lawfare. The power of social media on politics became evident from the early 2010s onward with protesters during the so-called Arab Spring violence of 2010 to 2012, actively using Faceplant and ex-Twitter, it was Twitter then, to organize and coordinate protests, which culminated in a series of regime change operations across the region benefiting the United States. The 2016 media analysis revealed that the Clinton State Department played a key role in training radical groups in the effective use of social media for disruption and regime change operations in the Middle East. The tool proved highly effective again in 2013 when a Faceplant post by a Ukrainian TV journalist turned activist triggered the Euromaidan protests in Kiev, which ultimately culminated in the violent overthrow of the Ukrainian government in February 2014 by the United States of America. A similar campaign, A similar campaign targeted Iran was tried in 2022, but was squashed in time by the Iranian government. So this is interesting about this. They've been vocal about the social media being used to take down their government. And so they're a lot more quick to smash down, if you will. We might call it free speech, but they know it's a real threat. And it's fomented by whom? The CIA, typically. The United States. Aware of the importance of social media in the 2020 election and taking advantage of increasingly stringent rules on online misinformation, censorious actors were able to rein in organic user-generated online discussions related to the elections, including Trump's allegations going back to the summer of 2020 about the mail-in voter fraud, which Meta kept in place until early this year. As the elections neared, the October surprise series of bombshells, New York Post reports revealed that the Democratic nominee Joe Biden's son Hunter engaged in an allegedly pay-for-play scheme, trading access to his powerful father for cash was heavily censored online. Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg apologized to the Americans in August for deranking the Hunter Biden story at the FBI's behest. Twitter founder Jack Dorsey admitted in March 2021 that censoring the story was a total mistake, but did not elaborate on who made it. Tech billionaire Elon Musk purchased of Twitter in 2022 was followed by the publication of the Twitter F-Files, a series of reports detailing the FBI's direct role in the moderation of content on the platform during the 2020 race and afterward. And I have had a question I was reading through. Why isn't Hillary Clinton in jail? Or those FBI employees? Is the problem that appears won't be fixed anytime soon, if ever. And another problem now afflicting the Republic we the people failed to keep. Read through the history on that and you just see it continues and continues and nobody seems to know what to do. And anyway, no one seems to care. Judge Napolitano came out with an interesting write-up, and I'd like to read the bulk of it to you. The government compels silence again. This is a very interesting problem. And he's here to tell us about it, and I think it's very important that we understand it. And you see how far back acts of Congress have been in place. As I tell you, there's some of these acts have been 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years back before they ever get brought out. Which, when you see that, starts to show you there's a plan. There's a plan behind the scenes that's being used. It's why I'm so adamant to make sure I tell people on the certain things of sustainability. Those things have been in the law for, and I think substantively against property since at least the middle 70s. And sitting there, waiting, just to be engaged one day, one to have the key turned on and start that machine up. Judge Andrew Napolitano writes, when Congress enacted the Stored Communications Act of 1986, SCA, it claimed the statute would guarantee the privacy of digital data that service providers were retaining in storage. The act prohibited the providers from sharing the data, stored data, and it prohibited unauthorized access to the data, commonly called computer hacking, except, of course, if the recipients of the hackers were working with the federal government. Just as it did with the PAT IoT Act of 2001, which permits one federal agent to authorize another to conduct a search of stored data without a judicially issued search warrant, this SCA permits judges to issue orders for searches without meeting the probable cause standard required by the Fourth Amendment. And I just ran across another act done in 1883 that allows for the agencies to split apart, have no oversight. And this is something I'm not sure I fully appreciate until I saw that there was an act there. Why? You try to get accountability for agencies and it's almost impossible. I mentioned that without Judge Napolitano's comment about it because that would be partly why we can then move the agencies to act on their own and they're unaccountable. And why we're seeing the unaccountability, which means we have a thing to go fix way back before the 1900s. But just like the PATIRT Act, the Patriot Act, they call it, which in its original form prohibited a recipient of agent-issued search warrants called the National Security Letters from telling any persons of their existence, the SCA requires judges who issue orders for a search upon the request of the government to bar the custodian of the data who has received the order from informing the person whose data is sought. What if the person whose data is sought has a claim of privacy on that data? What if the owner and creator of that data relied on the Fourth Amendment to keep the government's hands off it? What if the person was the President of the United States at the time he created the data? What if he has a claim of executive privilege on it? What if all persons having privacy claim on all stored data and have a right to resist the government's efforts to seek it? Here's the backstory. Now, this was written because the Supreme Court just came out again, as the title lead it says, to now impose silence. You're not free to speak, notwithstanding the First Amendment. Is a judicial order for data under SCA a search warrant under the Fourth Amendment? It is, after all, a judicial order directing the authorization of official of the executive branch to surveil and seize private property. And it does specifically describe the place to be searched or the thing to be seized. But because it is not based on probable cause of a crime, as the Fourth Amendment requires, the short answer is no. In United States versus Carpenter, 2018, the Supreme Court ruled that the orders for data based on government need rather than probable cause of warrant are constitutionally defective and the data cannot be used at trial. But the government, which knows how to evade an uncomfortable constitutional provision or the Supreme Court opinion, has continued to use the SCA as a means around them. This became apparent this week in the case before the Supreme Court involving former President Donald Trump, Jack Smith, and Elon Musk. 2 years ago, Smith, the special counsel prosecuting Trump for alleged January 6 crimes, obtained an order from a federal judge in Washington, D.C., directing X, formerly known as Twitter, to surrender copies of communications sent and received by Trump in January 2021 and prohibiting X from informing Trump. This was not a search warrant, as it was not based on probable cause or crime. It was an SCA order based on governmental need. The SCA is unconstitutional on its face. This is so because it directly defies the Fourth Amendment, which guarantees privacy for requiring and showing under oath of probable cause of crime and is the absolute precondition of all government searches and seizures. Nevertheless, X complied with the order but filed a secret application with the judge who issued it seeking to vacate the order of silence. Let me highlight this. They had to file that in secret in the court. It was not a public action because of this. Government orders for silence have a long and troubled history. The same First Amendment that prohibits Congress from infringing upon the freedom of speech also prohibits the government from compelling speech. If Congress cannot infringe upon it or compel speech, how can it compel silence? It cannot constitutionally do so. Let me interject again. The agencies, this is prior to the agency takeover in the 30s, just after the 30s of the United States. In 1883, there was a separation of the accountability for agencies. And just keep that in the back of your mind as you're listening to this, and maybe that's where this is coming from. I'm not saying it's lawful. I'm just saying it's there. And if I've told you before, if you are in a situation, if you don't find the first step, your work will be not fruitful at all, and because you didn't start where you needed to begin, you didn't start at the beginning, essentially. In 2005, in Bridgeport, Connecticut, two elderly librarians were at work one day when two young men walked into the library and identified themselves as FBI agents. They handed one of the librarians an NSL, which had been authorized by their boss. After the librarian who received the NSL handed it to her colleague, the agents threatened to arrest both of them for violating the Patriot Act's command of silence. The Patriot Act prohibited the recipients of the NSL from telling anyone, even a lawyer, of the receipt of it. The feds in Bridgeport were looking to discover who had read certain books. What? There were government-owned books in a government-owned library. How can reading them be a crime? Moreover, the right to read is a fundamental liberty protected by the First Amendment from governmental infringement without due process and by the Fourth Amendment from governmental surveillance without a search warrant. When the librarian sued for the right to discuss the receipt of the NSL, the feds charged them with criminal violations of the Patriot Act by discussing the receipt of the NSL with their lawyers. After the federal district court granted a federal appellate court upheld the relief the librarian sought, the criminal case against them was dismissed. Congress amended the Patriot Act to permit recipients of NSLs to discuss them with counsel. By then, five different federal judges had declared the silence provision of the Patriot Act unconstitutional. That should have been the end of the commands for silence, but it wasn't. When the lawyers for X argued that SCA infringed upon Musk's freedom of speech to tell Trump what the feds were up to, a federal district court rejected the argument, and a federal appellate court upheld the rejection. X appealed to the Supreme Court, and the court, without an opinion or a dissent, declined to hear X's appeal. So Judge Napolitano writes in conclusion, here we go again. Doesn't the Constitution mean what it says? Of what value are constitutional guarantees if those in whose hands we repose them for safekeeping secretly and repeatedly decline to do so? How does this end? Very serious condition right now. As I've been telling you, this PATRT Act needs to be excised. And so the separation of agency and state, it seems, on these matters. And that's why some of these Supreme Court decisions that did clip the wings of the agencies are so important. They start to bring us back closer to where the rights we should have had are not infringable by agency, and they have been. This is one that now passes the Supreme Court, and you just have to question who the Supreme Court's working for, at least on the surface of it. When I was talking about the globally organized criminals, when I say globally organized, I'm going to hit some more information that's now filtering back through after the information I passed a couple episodes ago. Pact for the Future shows UNGA has become a tool to ramrod West's interests. Now, as I hope people have been picking up, the West's interests are not constitutional interests. They promote this rules-based order nonsense. They promote what three Secretary of States are now saying, we lose total control when we don't have that control. We don't have a boot to put on the neck of social media. Understand, as I've said, these are coded words that we read. We're not really talking here about the West's interest like it's some noble thing. And you have to read enough so that you always hold in your mind some things that allow you to fix on that on the right-hand side or left-hand side, however you've positioned this, alongside, parallel with what you're reading, so you can rebuild what's actually being told to us. The Pact for the Future shows the UNGA has become a tool to ramrod the West's interests. This Pact for the Future I condemned in one of the episodes, if you go back and listen, and I gave you just some of what there is in utilizing the website that Robert Malone had put up and showing the coding in the words and that they have to be understood or else we don't understand what it's really saying. This article criticizes that very condition here weeks later. And so it says, has become. And I ask the question, has become? See, it's always been that the UNGA, since it's been established, has just been in the hands of the West. The whole entire UN is a tool of the West. And so that's got to keep that in mind as we move this thing through. It's, the United Nations, we think, is a foreign body. They're really under control of those that are commanding the future that they want. And that ends up also being economics, if I can put that all, financial, fiscal, monetary policy, global policy into that as well. Because a lot of this, ultimately, especially in sustainable development, is an economic takedown. As I hope I'm proving it to you as we go through each week and read things and I show you where you can go read and see it. And I would hope, I guess I'd add this too, I'm hoping you read and do the methodology I'm telling you and come up with whatever you come up with, and if it's different, let me know, as I told you. I'm hoping to inform people of what I do and with the background that I've come through to show you what there might be available to see, and with that, you may actually see more. And I'm hoping some of that is the truth. We may need more, a better comprehensive view than what I can pull together here in the future, in the near future. The United Nations General Assembly, that's that UNGA, pushed through the Pact for the Future on September 22nd. Russia advised against adopting what it called a raw and non-consensual text and then made an attempt to introduce an amendment to the pact, but the effort was voted down. By and large, the UN General Assembly has become a tool used by the West to promote its interests. Igor Shatrov, head of the Expert Council of Russia Strategic Development Fund. What did I just preface this whole thing on? This is about money, economics, ultimately. Fiscal nature, where that's where you have laws to make taxation or expenditures monetary, the value that the people use to exchange. Here we have, this is an expert talking about this, the Council of Russia Strategic Development Fund. This explains why the Russian proposal amendment to the Pact of the Future adopted at the opening of the two-day summit of the future at UNGA based on, quote, the principle of non-interference in matters within domestic jurisdiction of a state drew a negative response, he explained. So take note of this point. But there is another reason, and I'll explain in a second. Quote, the West inherently perceives international politics as interference in the affairs of other states in its own interests, Shatrov said, which is why the Russian proposal was snubbed. So what if the West is a euphemism for the global banksters' interests and others? As we keep this going through about that track, as I keep telling you, the UN and the sustainable development is really about sustainable debt. And we read that in the Agenda 2030, as I tell you to go read it. I've read it to you. Those of you that were around or new to be here, and listen. And then took interest in it. It's essentially the roadmap of what they expect to see. When you understand where they end up having to be, you can interfere with that, if you would, if only you would. But I'm interjecting now that the West is the global bankster interests. Article goes on to say, however, not all countries are ready to toe the West's lines, he added, referring to the 40 or so UN member states that did not express their unequivocal support for the pact. That was stated back when I was talking about the Pact for the Future, and they were talking about the state, the government, the nations, the countries that were not wanting to build that consensus because they have certain things they need, but that's not going to fill for them. No bill is going to fill that for them. So the fact that there's some resistance here, that's good to hear. But those nations are likely being seduced into a servitude through BRIC, the BRICS. Plus, now, as it starts to build, as I've been talking. This is, again, this article comes out and it's talking about everything I've been talking for years and years, but even in the last 6 months, the importance of this coming on. And we can read in the next paragraph, what a surprise. That might be the way that is. Amid the escalating confrontation between the West and Russia, many countries have begun to align themselves with Moscow's position rather than that of the West states, prompting the emergence of new formats such as BRICS, he remarked. But our listener here, our interest here for my listener, a limitation which we should remember and use to stop this entire abomination is also put in here. The Pact for the Future, like all documents issued by the UNGA, is advisory in nature, the pundit noted, unlike the mandatory decisions of the UN Security Council. Then we hear a concise summary of what areas of attack and intent in the article as well. The main text of the pact covers five themes, international peace and security. Now let me remind you, the and are conjunctive. They come together. It's not just peace. No, it's going to be peace and security. How do you keep that? Force. This is like Orwellian type stuff if we can get there. But here, peace and security is one, science, technology, and innovation. How many times have I told you that? And digital partnerships, youth and the next generation, and the transformation of global governance. The three core documents of the pact are the Pact for the Future, with the commitments of sustainable development, and the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement, the Global Digital Compact, and Declaration of Future Generations. The blueprint pledges action towards a multitude of apparently admirable goals, such as the eradication of poverty, building peaceful, inclusive communities, the revival of trust in global institutions, etc. So that's the UN right there, by the Sustainable Development Administration, global institutions. However, it is short on specifics, as we do not see any scenarios on how to deliver on these goals, Shatrov summed up, adding, "Therefore, this is simply a document that outlines the situation at the moment, but it does not carry any content." That's correct. Just an outline. All these are just outlines. This is the coding problem. But he says it. I ask, where's the beef? And that is the beef. Soon to be synthetic. The Pact for the Future, rushed through the UNGA on September 22nd, was branded a huge, huge defeat for the UN by Russia's Deputy Foreign Minister, Sergei Vershinin. Quote, from the very outset, those who coordinated the work on the drafted included in it only what was dictated to them mainly by Western countries. And I read to you that the United States was involved, and that was the main problem with this whole thing. The West was heavily involved. There's not outsiders here. Russia was an outsider. But let me get to the punchline there. I've already told you the punchline. We'll get to that in a second. What happened is a huge, huge defeat for the UN because the principle of sovereign equality of states, which is enshrined in the Charter, was cynically sacrificed to one group of countries whose interests had been carefully safeguarded for all these months. Never before have we witnessed such a despotism in the UN platform, Vershinin stated. Russia's first deputy permanent representative to the UN, Dmitry Polonansky, called the pact a huge, huge blow to the organization as a whole. The pact is unbalanced and contains very dangerous provisions which will backfire and undermine multilateralism and intergovernmental nature of the UN upheld in the Charter, he posted on X. But well, except that that was the plan. And either Russia is naive, or ignorant, or lying. And except for, quote, has become tool for the West, the UN was set up to be the tool for the West. Russia knows this. They say it periodically and routinely. They are the organized global cabal Clintonista types who don't want to lose that control. Don't let you have free speech. And look at what is located as well. The statement by the Russian here as well is the big surprise. They call it the big surprise. It's BS. The initials are BS. It is. While complaining that the U.S. is pushing through by consensus, Russia appears to be taking the more principled approach. They talk to us about that. But Russia is already implementing most of the outcomes the Pact for the Future seeks, as I've explained behind which said, episode after episode. We talk about this when I get around periodically, back around every other third week or so. For instance, when they're already implementing the national, not private, digital ruble for their Siberian gulag. So while I fairly agree with the Russian witnessing the international norms and lawful function, the objection by Russia appears nothing more than a good cop, bad cop for global consumption to cover Russia's headlong lead that they already have toward the global economic panopticon. And did you catch when I read it that the expert from Russia was Igor Shatrov, head of the Expert Council of Russia Strategic Development Fund? I highlighted it for you then. It's so important, and I'm going to repeat it right now. The strategic is future global positioning, including economic, in this case. The term fund there, and why he is commenting on the pact for the future and how the nations will be brought to the future that they want, that they represent the global banksters. Whatever nation participates will lose their principles and sovereignty, as we heard in the last episode, behind which the example of the president of Uganda deciding not to participate with the World Bank demands for sustainable servitudes, including accepting special rights for LGBTQ+ movement participants in trade before the World Bank loans. And he said no. Russia's big surprise, the BS, is not that it doesn't want to impose the future that they want, but that Russia wants free autonomy to impose the future it wants, its way. But that's not how this is going to work, and that's why their amendment to restore the national sovereignty to a document that intends none, which Russia objects to generally in any regard, was denied in this culture war. But take note, as I said, listen carefully for what we need to listen to. Take note. These are very serious notices that we, the people, everywhere, actually, well, those of us that with at least three brain cells still functioning, why three brain cells? Not two, to break the ties of confusion from any of the other two functioning brain cells that might cause our inaction in that confusion, because being free is not a spectator sport. Remember, the spectators to a circus performance are part of and the purpose for that performance. And these organized criminals continue to wage the culture war to transform the home of the brain, if it still exists, I hope. But in this case, we also see another ongoing corruption that inadvertently acts as an exploding law mine, as we read, transgender lawsuit against Christian Baker dropped. The Colorado Supreme Court has dismissed a case against Jack Phillips, who refused to make a gender transition case. Jack Phillips was sued by an attorney, Autumn Scardina, in 2017 after his Lakewood-based Masterpiece Cake Shop refused to make a pink cake with blue frosting to celebrate the would-be customer's gender transition. On Tuesday, Colorado justices said in a 6-3 ruling that Scardina had not exhausted options to seek redress through another court before filing a lawsuit with the Supreme Court. They did not, however, comment on Phillips's free speech rights. Quote, "We express no view on the merits of these claims," Justice Melissa Hart said, representing the majority. So this was not a dropped case before the Colorado Supreme Court, as the title says. It's a matter not able to be in the Supreme Court at this time. This is instead another evidence that attorneys do not know basic procedures and due process. In this case, even two attorneys that did. One, the complainant, and the other, the attorney representing it. Both dragging Phillips through the courts. It's been going on for over 10 years now. The Colorado justices said that Scardina had not exhausted options to seek redress through another court before filing a lawsuit in the Supreme Court. The article on this case are so poorly written, I couldn't quickly find which options were exhausted, what needed to be exhausted, and where, what court that would be, or where they should have filed that in. Normally, the exhaustion defect means administrative options that are left, and possibly beyond that, needing prior proper judicial treatment. If any of you have looked through that, you've got to go through your administrative provisions first, unless there's a clear-cut case of rights, and then, as I've shown you, you don't have to, like particularly your land rights. But for this project, the court looked and said, no, those what they're claiming is not even rising to that level. So they haven't gone to the proper court. The Colorado Supreme Court said it did not have jurisdiction to decide a case not yet properly before it. And the court did not comment on Phillips' free speech rights, nor, quote, express any view on the merits of these claims. Justice Melissa Hart said, representing the majority, that anyone can claim a win on decision settling in this matter would be an error. So, but either side, this is not a win at all. You've got to read carefully. It's not what the title said either. This case should not have been filed. It was not ready to be filed in the Supreme Court. It appears then yet again, as I said just before, that justice is denied by further delay by attorney incompetence in a system the officers of the court, members of which they profit handsomely under color of authority, licensed to practice to our detriment. Who's footing the bill for these mistakes and errors? As an aside operation, if colors, as is alleged in this purported lawfare challenge, didn't express a belief system, didn't communicate a fact, flags, banners, and heraldry would have no importance, or as a tool of expression of war. That was really well told to me in those Benedict's Admiralty documentations. The importance of communicating your army, your nation, your people is a standard in mankind. And we didn't in this line here, we didn't see any other flag raised upon Iwo Jima, for instance. And that these colors don't run loses all significance, the propaganda of that promotion notwithstanding. And understand that the distinction in this, the people can hold that sentiment in their hearts and soul, while government propaganda uses the principle to go to foreign places that the people should have never run to. A banner or a foreign presentation, colors, are expressions and therefore speech. And if colors were not a form of meaningful communication, the pink and blue expression in this culture war would not be an issue. So these don't seem like a lot, but these are very big principles to be protecting. And what we have is a court, the attorneys, the Bar Association members of which, didn't go through the process quite correctly to get the procedures done, the court judgments that were needed, to get to a Supreme Court to review. And that delay is injustice. This case has been going on for about 10 years now. And in some regard, I don't see how it's a case, but here we are. And there's just as Uganda, back to that last episode, does not, again, these sustainable servitudes imposed. This was exactly what they were facing. Uganda decided not to accept the IMF's cultural green color regulation offer that's too good to refuse. IMF recommends El Salvador narrow the scope of the country's Bitcoin law, limit public sector exposure to BTC. To limit governmental exposure, the IMF is recommending the terminating of the cryptocurrency's legal tender status, as Bitcoin lost half of its value from its record high in November. Let me interject something. I say go to gold coin and silver coin. Doesn't mean that the value is going to not change relative to inflation, deflation area issues, but what the value of that gold stays pretty much the same. And so you have there's a different ground, so you have a different line that comes in. They're not talking any different than Bitcoin, and there is a difference, but it moves in a similar manner. The problem is that I don't know that Bitcoin should be a national currency. I'm thinking more perfect that it's private and leave it alone and let it go where it does. What's not disclosed is when the token was purchased relative to that value loss, relative to that comment. It is said that the IMF is taking a more conciliatory attitude than previous tactics to repeal the nation's Bitcoin law. If El Salvador won't repeal Bitcoin status as a legal currency, it should reduce Bitcoin's legal support, it says. El Salvador became the first country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as a legal tender in 2021. Earlier this year, President Nayib Bukele said that the Central American nation plans to continue accumulating 1 BTC per day. The International Monetary Fund has advised El Salvador to reform the country's rules on Bitcoin as an official currency. And I say just privatize it. Don't bring it in. Let the people have something separate. But the government doesn't like competition. It doesn't like that because it can't track it, right? That's the whole point about this blockchain nonsense is really about. During a press briefing, IMF spokesperson Julie Kozak says that the agency is ongoing engagement with El Salvador on policies that can boost productivity and economic governance. So what does my listener hear there? That the IMF is interested in boosting national productivity with proper governmental economics? Or can you hear, as I do, that the IMF wants to boost productivity to the IMF through its regulation or governance of El Salvador's economy? In other words, El Salvador is not sovereign enough to decide for itself, as Uganda found. So let's read for that in the article if that servient, unsovereign condition is the case. Quote, addressing risks arising from Bitcoin is a key element of these discussions. And of course, the goal is for the fund to be in a position to support a credible and well-sequenced policy package that is designed by the authorities. So there it is. The answer in that next paragraph. For the fund and a policy by local officials, as long as it is agreeable with the fund, the IMF only if it determines the policy package credible and will sequence. So what's the current problem? COSAC says the IMF says El Salvador to reconsider its policy on Bitcoin, which include the public's exposure to the flagship crypto asset. So what does public exposure, the exposure to the people, have anything to do with this? What does that exposure, the public, we think public means people. You'll also hear the term general public. That's actually more closely related to the people. When they say public, as the decode here, is to understand that they're talking about government. So what does public exposure, the exposure to the people, have anything to do with the IMF, unless the word public actually does not pertain to the people and means the government itself? So public means government. But why this concern over Bitcoin? Read, quote, "With respect to the details of Bitcoin, what we have recommended is a narrowing of the scope of the Bitcoin law, strengthening the regulatory framework oversight of the Bitcoin ecosystem, and limiting the public sector exposure to Bitcoin." Oh, so if you listen to that, we're back to regulatory framework and oversight, IMF oversight, of the Bitcoin ecosystem by the IMF. But guess what? The IMF has no authority over Bitcoin ecosystem to have any oversight pursuant to an IMF credible and well-sequenced policy package for its regulatory framework. Oh, and did I fail to mention the IMF doesn't like Bitcoin to begin with? Rather, the dislike of Bitcoin by the IMF has been reported to be and remains an implacable enemy of the El Salvador's Bitcoin project since Bukele declared it legal tender in 2021. And this most likely is because the IMF is not an issuing authority and is not a product of the fiat system that the IMF can control the supply of. Also, in limiting Bitcoin holdings, the IMF can transfer the control of that newfound indentured wealth, the reduction of the Bitcoin, of which limits El Salvador's exposure to Bitcoin in the first instance, and otherwise through the amendments to the government's Bitcoin regulation, because the IMF can't actually touch Bitcoin. This is not unlike the Federal Reserve having the account for gold and silver on the asset side of its ledger, not the debt side. My reservations about Bitcoin aside, you've heard me talk about them, about what the problem is, quite a number of them. Monetarily avoiding the products of the fiat debtor system are not so governable, and the preferable mediums of value transfer, such as gold and silver, and in this case, as well, Bitcoin, it is only being reported that before Bukele legalized Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador, the country's sole currency was U.S. dollars. There's another problem. He hasn't suffered like a couple of other people in the Middle East, leaders, and killed because they tried to do this. Bukele explicitly turned towards decentralized currency as an attempt to gain national sovereignty and economic independence. There's another proof that touching the dollar is a third rail to national sovereignty all by itself, or the IMF, or the World Bank. And so we're watching, we're witnessing what is good and what is bad, and what the countries are starting to come around to have to deal with to try and free themselves. And I'm not saying I agree with the governments in other countries and that they're any better because they're doing this. What I'm saying is, when you're looking at the people who control your lives through the medium you use to exchange and communicate value, your life is a debtor. You're in debt to that system. So this shows yet again that the limiting national exposure to the IMF debt prison regains national sovereignty and economic independence. Making a sovereign choice in money ought to work as well for my listener, as I've been advocating. And again, it's not a silver bullet, but we do have a way to go to start cleaving this evil from us. We have other things to deal with, but they aren't that other people have control of us, actually. This is BTWRLM 598. As we move into a little bit of crypto, real relative to the national private digital value media, here's a lawsuit. I suggested the crypto industry, even fledgling as it was then, should have done when the agency first reached its clammy regulatory tentacles out and touched it with its notice. this entity did exactly that when the vampire squid came a knocking. We read, crypto exchange sues U.S. market regulator. So it takes a time, I guess, for people to figure things out. When they get behind a woodshed, it starts to get a little bit clearer. The cryptocurrency, let me interject as well. These latest new Supreme Court decisions to limit the exposure to agency regulatory power and property taking is immense here now coming through. I say that they should have done this early on. I wouldn't change that. But now that there's been a little bit of things going on in the agency limitations, they may be actually better positioned. The problem they have now is that there's been a lot of decisions made, precedent made on the agency side. The cryptocurrency exchange Crypto.com has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, for what it believes to be an overstepping of legal boundaries in regulating the crypto industry. The decision by Crypto.com to sue the SEC came after it received a so-called Wells notice from the regulator, according to a statement issued on a company's website on Tuesday. The company claims to be seeking to protect the future of the industry. The Wells notice is a formal declaration that the regulator intends to recommend an enforcement action against it. According to Reuters, retail trading platforms Robinhood Crypto Business, major U.S. crypto exchange Coinbase, and NFT marketplace OpenSea are among the companies in the digital assets industry that have received such notice. Let me offer here, this word asset typically is value. It's not debt. Now, when you get on the inside of a debt system, they'll claim an asset is a debt instrument. But looking from here, and it's not regulated, that word asset is very powerful. This is relating back to the prior tab I was talking about, where it actually equates to the performance of a goal. And I'm not going to necessarily say that it is. I'm still not so sure. There's a lot of hang-ups with the digital things, electronic things. However, that aside, looking at this, we're looking at somebody who finally got their notice and they sued. They come right back and said, we don't think you have the authority. Well, they went pretty quick, right up the ladder quick to go with the lawsuit. You've heard me say the very same thing relative to property rights, agricultural rights, land, the property themselves, the miners, all this is all the same, all the same stuff. The SEC's unauthorized and unjust actions towards the crypto industry have left no other choice than to file suit, Singapore-based Crypto.com stated. Singapore-based. Why didn't we do this out of America? Foreigners know our laws better than we. I find is very interesting. A lot sad, but very interesting. Our lawsuit contends that the SEC has unilaterally expanded its jurisdiction beyond the statutory limits, and separately that the SEC has established an unlawful rule that trades in nearly all crypto assets or securities transactions, no matter how they are sold. That's exactly what I said years ago. They're going to confound that so they can grab the regulatory power. But we seek to stop the SEC's illegal actions in excess of their authority and in violation of federal law in their tracks, the statement reads. Separately, the company filed a petition with the Commodities Futures Trading Commission and the SEC seeking a joint interpretation to confirm that certain cryptocurrency derivative products are solely regulated by the CFTC. And so here you see someone really thinking about how this was working out. Really appreciated looking at this story, watching this report come out, that someone finally pulled that off and did it. And we'll have to see now as we see the errors of the attorneys, if they screwed this one up for everyone, actually, if this goes down wrong. And the recent Supreme Court decisions, as I said, clipping was like executive wings and the federal agency tentacle reach and suction force should help in this challenge as well in this case now. So very interesting stuff. Like I said, you got to pull everything out, and if it becomes a Wild West, and that's what it is, but the regulations now become imposed upon you, and government wants to see your stuff. There's nothing private. And that's what digital seems to be, the big data is all about. Well, I started the broadcast showing you inside, you're vulnerable inside these systems. You have no control. I've said this over and over and over again. It's not even that I dislike the technology and things like that. AI is a cool tool, but not beyond. That kind of thing. And so if you hear me being rejecting all this, then you're not quite listening too close enough. Rethink about what I'm saying. I'm looking at the government wants to come in, and there's good reasons why sometimes the government will come in and protect, because we're not so good at protecting ourselves. I've seen that can work. But it has to be limited. And I saw where in history, the government didn't want to fight the miners no more. They were at war with the miners. The miners are going to fight them. But they said, no, we got to regulate this. And what they did is they disposed the land. They didn't regulate it like we normally think. That's what the BLM tries to do. Tries to regulate an uncommon mineral deposit that's not regulable. It's disposed. And that's the crime. That's where the problem goes. That's the trust breach. So I see examples where the government has the duty and obligation to dispose for reasons, and there's good reasons why they've done it that way, and you can meet that the land disposes, but it's not supposed to be interfered with by any governmental agency, is property. And so these so-called assets, these electrons, are a property, and the SEC should have no control over it. Why they agreed that maybe the CFTC should, I don't know, but I haven't read that deep. Anyway, good to see someone finally stood up and did, or attempt, or looks like that they're doing, challenging what I was suggesting needed to be done before any of this stuff got going. They had to clear that hurdle a long time ago, but now they got a lot of overburden, and we'll see. I'm kind of optimistic. Again, given what the Supreme Court just did to limit the agencies and the executive, central banks of Australia, Canada, and Colombia. CBDC projects on ice. The inevitability of central bank digital currencies has taken a hit recently as multiple countries, including Australia, Colombia, and Canada, have paused their CBDC initiatives, calling into question the need for digital fiat. Listen very carefully. This is kind of an interesting story to pop up, but you're going to find everything I've been saying is the limitation of a central. Remember, it's not decentralized. It's centralized. Even Bitcoin's not really decentralized. It's centralized. However, this is a public, a government initiative. And they're finding that the people, remember, you're playing a big part of this. Whether you think that it works or not, you're playing a big part about how this is going to be moving forward or not, or how you can slow it down. You're watching this sustainable process right in this article as well. Crypto previously covered the decision by the Bank of Canada to halt plans for digital loonie in lieu of exploring other avenues to support digital payments. Let me offer, I don't understand how your current credit cards, your current money card, gift cards aren't that system. Maybe someone can explain it to me how it's not. Doesn't have no blockchain, doesn't need any overhead, nothing. And it works. And maybe that's what we're going to hear in this. The existing system works, and we're going to hear a bit about that. Maybe that's what we're talking about. The Bank of Canada, so why go change into this big old system? Well, they have a reason for the national side, and we'll get to that here. The Bank of Canada confirmed to CBC News it has shifted its focus away from the idea of introducing a digital Canadian dollar, which could be used for online purchases and money transfers, wrote the CBC News journalist Kyle Back. And Megan Reed, quote, the bank has undertaken significant research towards understanding the implications of a retail central bank digital currency, including exploring the implications of a digital dollar on the economy and financial system, and the technological approaches to provide a digital form of public money that is secure and accessible. And boy, those are the two major problems I was telling you when they put it in India. I think it was India. It wasn't secure, and it wasn't accessible, and they found that out terribly quick, and people weren't going to go for it, certainly not in Kenya. The report indicated that the central bank will instead focus on preparing for the ongoing evolution of payments both in Canada and around the world through policy research and analysis. Now Australia and Colombia have joined Canada in halting their CBDC programs as they see the general public being well served by the existing options in the private sector for the time being. They'll be working on that. Quote, there is no clear public interest case to issue retail CBDC in Australia yet, said Reserve Bank of Australia in a recent report. in the case of jurisdictions that have either issued a retail CBDC, exclusively emerging market economies, or indicated that the issuance of the retail CBDC is distinctly possible in the next few years, the main motivations have less resonance in the Australian context, at least at the present. This recognizes that Australians are currently well served by a retail payment system that, by global standards, is efficient, innovative, and safe, the RBA added. Quote, however, there are many potential benefits of the cost to consider in this assessment will be revisited as more information becomes available, including lessons from the experiences of other jurisdictions, which was what? We don't want it. The people said no. Pretty interesting. While the investigations are on pause for a moment, the RBA left the door open for their explorations to continue in the future if needed. There's your in. My listener, there's your in, wherever you live. By committing to a forward work plan covering the next 3 years, the RBA and Treasury, not the Treasury, just Treasury, will work closely together in progressing understanding and key policy issues related to retail CBDC and to support the future deliberation on related issues by the Australian government, they said. Why is that consistent in the United States if we're different? Not the Treasury. They're both Treasury. In Australia or United States? Treasury. No the. There's no the. But let's get back to that. The forward work plan. The work plan. They mean woke plan or work plan? This work plan will include soliciting a wide range of insights and perspectives on the merits of retail CBDC in Australia and will be informed by a structured public engagement process beginning in 2025, the report noted. The RBA and Treasury will also establish industry and academic advisory forums from next year, and the RBA will build on last year's pilot exercise by conducting further experimentation and practical research. So there's the paragraph, there's your consensus paragraph, and you can see it right in the structured public engagement process and advisory forums. They haven't gotten enough public buy-in from the people, the future generations of victims yet. They keep up the local resistance everywhere and the physical use of the existing cash system is informing them that what they're offering isn't well taken. The government, the general public, we call the people, is being well served by the retail payment system that exists. So much so that they can't figure out how to effectively sell the digital corruption to the people in their corrupt and adequately secure needs. What they have is adequately secure. They can't provide that in the new system. The digital clearance system only makes sense when you're looking at this, as I've explained, on the international level for cross-border settlements between nations, typically. Now, they're incorporating now more corporate that way as well because these corporations have gotten so large and the business is so big. But they're not giving up to connect the international system that the people already are not ready for. And I hope forever for their sakes on all this. We're here. The resistance is working. In Colombia, the Banco de la República de Colombia published the report that said, quote, the analysis carried out by the Banco de la República indicates that for now there are no reasons that justify the issuance of a retail CBDC in Colombia. So remember the word here is retail added there. They're not going cross-border payments at this point. However, they said yes, so we got to keep reading, and we'll see that that's still sitting there. And don't forget, they're going to set up a structured platform to get your buy-in eventually. This is how that Hegelian dialectic works in that structured process. Talked all about how this works, and they're having to bring this in because they haven't got the people sold. They haven't got the public buy-in. The potential benefits of this can be achieved with alternative policies. In particular, Colombia has updated the regulation to encourage competition and achieve greater transparency in the market. Likewise, the Banco de la República has assumed the responsibility of promoting interoperability in immediate electronic payments with the development of centralized infrastructures and their regulation, the central bank added. See, they don't need any of what they're talking about in the digital future that they want. Instant electronic payments have the potential to reduce dependence on cash and reach large sectors of the population at low cost. That's a selling point. But what's the gift card? How hard is that? In the future, as is already happening in some regions of the world, it will be feasible. In the future, it will be feasible to interconnect national instant payment infrastructures with those of other jurisdictions and improve cross-border payments. It's exactly that they aren't giving up here on the digital gulag enslaving the token citizens I've been talking about. They just aren't getting that buy-in. They need here in their bums rush into vulnerable digital oblivion. As we read in Colombia, the Banco de la República de Colombia published the report that said the analysis carried out by the Banco de la República indicates that for now there is no reason to justify the issuance of a retail CBDC. And so what else do they go to do? They know the people are pushing back. And if you thought this was about money more than control, we can read the issuance of retail CBDC represents a significant operational and reputational risks without use cases that guarantee its contribution to well-being and without it being clear that it can be more efficient than the current strategy of the Bank of the Republic to strengthen immediate payments, the report concluded. So keep thinking about these gift cards and these debt cards. How much more immediate do we need? It's already got a system. You don't need to put it on a blockchain to keep track of it, have some bureau rat saying whether or not you have fulfilled your sustainable development obligations. Quote, the above considerations also allow us to conclude that for now, there is not sufficient reason for the issuance of a CBDC retail or policy wholesale in Colombia. Well, they've had a wholesale at this time because they really don't have it done on the national layer. According to Nicholas Anthony, a policy analyst of the Cato Institute Center for Monetary and Financial Alternatives and a fellow with the Human Rights Foundation, quote, Australia, Canada, and Colombia were right to pause the CBDC plans. Critics of the CBDCs have been writing about the risks to financial privacy, freedom, and markets for years, Anthony noted in an op-ed for Cointelegraph. He cited that Cato Institute's Norbert Michael, who has long warned that the CBDC would give federal officials full control over the money going into and coming out of every person's account. Elsewhere, Bitcoin Policy Institute Natalie Smolensky and Dan Held wrote, the rationales for implementing CBDC are already well covered by Bitcoin and stablecoins. And Circle Dante Disparte wrote that with a CBDC central bank would have a back door directly into your bank account, as well as the means to monitor every digital transaction made. When it comes to CBDCs, the costs far outweighed the benefits, Anthony declared. Yet despite the long-standing criticism, it is only relatively recent news that the central banks are taking official stances against launching CBDCs. Yes, there have been individual objections at times, however, official stances have been exceedingly rare. Around the time of 2023, International Monetary Fund Manager Director Kristalina Georgieva described the rise of CBDCs as a voyage that calls for pointed out. She cautioned that this is not the time to turn back and said, if anything, we need to raise another sail and pick up speed. I guess to the point of no return. Good album, if you've heard it. However, the news from Australia, Canada, and Colombia shows that not everyone is on board with CBDCs and the International Monetary Fund's plans for that matter, he emphasized. The recent statements from these central banks are by no means the final word on the matter. Quote, history has shown crises can quickly lead to radical changes in the way governments operate, and nothing these central banks have said is binding, end Anthony concluded. No, not the guy behind the woodshed. Nicholas Anthony says, however, this news is welcome. It's a welcome change of pace. If nothing else, this news shows that maybe CBDCs are less inevitable than some people think. And I say, let's hope so. Keep resisting. Don't stop using cash, even if it's a fiat at this point. Try to debank yourself if you can. Shift as you can to at least silver money. If not, gold for bigger expenses and that historically secure store of value, typically, especially while we're in the fiat system. And as I said, when they change back to gold, that the price stayed stable on the gold, but the prices of other things may fluctuate. And so it's a little bit different, but it's not necessarily so bad as what we see now. They're taking, the dollar's worth four cents now? They were able to steal that through the fiat system? That wouldn't happen. And we would just have to weigh our options. Now, what is limiting the reach of this genocidal psychopath and preparing the way for a nuclear holocaust that also needs to be put on ice is Trump saying Israel should strike Iran's nuclear sites. Preventing Iran from acquiring weapons of mass destruction should be a priority, the Republican candidate has said. Israel should carry out a strike on Iran's nuclear facilities to avenge Tehran's recent missile attack on the Jewish state, U.S. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump has argued. And I need to interject. Well, I saw this. I could not believe this guy is that ignorant. Just on that statement ago, it wasn't Tehran's recent missile attack that Israel has a right to avenge. That was Tehran's response to Israel killing and attacking their embassies in another country. And that's just the start of it. Get to back to this story, and this is so dangerous here. And look who he's supporting as well, the genocide of psychopaths. And I think people are starting to finally see it. I don't know what that's going to mean at the election, but this, people are starting to see you don't have a choice in either one of these folks. And even that said, because of the economic delay that we would be given under Trump, I almost think that's the way to go. Neither of them are actually fit. Especially when I see this. They both figure the consideration at war coming, and that's like how that's going to save us. And that's really not the truth. And the basis, the reasoning, is not reasoning at all. There isn't an argument here. I think they're being generous in this article. As President Trump spearheaded the U.S. withdrawal of 2018 from the nuclear deal with Iran, under the agreement, Iran had agreed to limit its nuclear program in exchange for lifting of economic sanctions. At the time, however, Trump argued that the deal did little to permanently prevent Tehran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. Speaking at the campaign event in North Carolina on Friday, Trump, known for his hawkish stance on Iran, disagreed with United States President Joe Biden, who had earlier refused to support an Iran attack, to support an Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear facilities. They asked him, "What do you think about Iran? Would you hit Iran?" And he goes, "As long as they don't hit the nuclear stuff." That's the thing you want to hit, right? I mean, it's the biggest risk we have, nuclear weapons, he said. Even that logic doesn't hold. But at any rate, going on to say, when they asked him that question, the answer should have been, hit the nuclear first and worry about the rest later. Meanwhile, according to an Al Jazeera report, Iran warned the U.S. that any Israeli attack could be met with an unconventional response. As tensions continue to soar in the Middle East, Politico reported that Biden is growing increasingly frustrated with Israel's conduct, including recent attacks on Hezbollah and the war in Gaza, with the White House said to be acknowledging the possibility that it may not be able to prevent a full-scale regional war. Which they really want. But did you hear that? They quoted unconventional response. From acquiring and preventing. It's only the purpose they want to do this, but they're already talking, Iran has already said unconventional response. Now why is the intelligence gathering capacity behind the woodshed better than Trump acknowledges is available to him that he says prevent after Iran says it reserves the right to an unconventional response, where that usually means nuclear, almost a week later than reported by Al Jazeera? How rabid did that deep state ear nick, the Randunit suggestive programming make Trump? As I was looking at this and that, and I talked about it, I'm on record, and you see how far over he went. The Zionistas lack the right to avenge or attack being lawlessly fostered and encouraged aside. Trump is willing to worry about nuclear winter after hitting the nuclear first. Do I have that about right? Iran professing already having a non-nuclear capacity, which Trump acknowledged in 2018, there was little to prevent Tehran, which does not necessarily mean homegrown nukes either, but supplied by foreign country, making an Iran a nuclear facility hit irrelevant, is Trump's argument and rationale. In other words, that there is nothing that can be prevented in attacking the Iran nuclear facilities if Iran is already non-conventionally or nuclear capable. And where did I pick up that on that phrase that they reported in this article a week later was that the Iran military put it in X Twitter. I cannot believe what I was reading there. Because they wrote, the people that can create a conventional sun at night can do it unconventionally too. Don't threaten us. And the picture was a bright white light at night that Iran had put on from their missiles in a missile attack. Let me reread that to you, and you figure what you think it says. The people that can create a conventional sun at night can do it unconventionally too. So we're not talking about unconventional biologicals or psychologicals or any of that kind of stuff. We're talking about a bright white light done unconventionally. They posted this almost a week before that article was written. I looked at that and I replied, did y'all just admit to something y'all have been denying? I may not be able to ever trust a thing you say again either way, but a yes will be sufficient. #IronDoom. They've already suggested that they are unconventionally beholden. And Trump is going to argue that it's relevant that we're going to attack the nuclear facilities they have over there. I told you we're very close if we're not past the time when there should be a nuclear disaster happening. And this guy, Trump, is telling you. And I'm hoping he's playing us all on what he says. I'm hoping he's holding his cards just right. And when he gets in, it changes just a little bit, like a little bit. But he's already telegraphing that he's willing to go after Iran. And Iran just said they can make night white, unconventional. The U.S. Navy was at the scene of Nord Stream blasts. Very important little story popped out. I saw a little bit of mumblings about it, but this is now more proof if we're going to believe the people that were on scene. And we'll take their word for what they said and what they did. We'll read this story, but I've got two more documents. They're in the foreign language for those of you that want to go get the translation so you see it for yourself. I'll read from the RT article because it's in English and I can read that. I can see that for myself. And we can then go, for those of you that are interested, and I'm saying we're interested because the United States has been denying that the United States foments war, the United States sets up for nuclear capacity, and it's all about hating Russia. And for the life of me, I can't figure out how and why, but that's what's going on, and it's a few people. And they happen to also be Zionista lovers that will give carte blanche license for the Zionista Federation movement, the political movement, to go take over and make a greater Israel, take over all the land that they have no right to. But U.S. Navy was at the scene of the Nord Stream blast. U.S. Navy vessels with their transponders switched off were operating at the scene shortly before the explosions that crippled the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines in the Baltic Sea. Danish newspaper Politiken has reported, citing a local harbor master. The paper spoke to John Anneker Nielsen, the harbor master at the Danish port of Kristiansø, located near Bornholm, which is about close where that thing happened. He said he had decided to share details of the events of September 2022, despite initially being not allowed to say a thing about them. According to Nielsen, he launched a rescue operation in the area 4 or 5 days before the Nord Stream blast after spotting ships with their transponders switched off and assuming there was an emergency. However, when Danish rescuers approached the scene, they saw that the vessels in question were U.S. Navy ships, Nielsen said. The Naval Command then told Nielsen and his colleagues to turn back, the harbormaster recalled. Politiken said Nielsen does not believe Western media claims that Nord Stream was sabotaged by Ukraine, supposedly using a yacht named Andromeda and a small crew to carry out the sophisticated attack. According to the paper, the harbormaster instead has, quote, some faith, close quote, in the versions of events provided by legendary investigative journalist Seymour Hersh. According to an informed source who talked to the Pulitzer Prize winner journalist, the explosions that were detonated on September 26, 2022 had been planted at the pipelines during the previous June by U.S. Navy divers under the cover of a NATO exercise called Baltrops 22. The White House denied the report, calling it utterly false and complete fiction. So if the White House denies this, the cooperation of John Anker Nielsen, the harbormaster of the Danish port of Kristiansø, must confirm this to be true. Showing once again, kids, thou shalt not tell a lie. It'll come back and give you dementia or worse. It can turn into an international embarrassment, especially with social media. Hey, maybe that's what Hillary Clinton meant about losing control. What do you think? This is all consistent with what I was saying in all the reports that were coming out at the time, looking through this, trying to figure things out. My problem with all this, and taking a side of Russia's observations, notwithstanding what they're doing themselves, and looking at this objectively to make their complaints, is really what the complaint of the American people should be. There's no honor in what we're seeing in the world with the United States. Certainly should be evidenced in the support and the lies relative to a country committing, boy, I just made a mistake. It's not even a country. It's a fraud that's coming under color of a country called the State of Israel, is committing genocide. Now in multiple places, they're killing off people in multiple countries. And the only way they can continue to do that is with the United States Army. It's with the United States experience, the prowess that it has. Together, I would suppose, with the UK. And that was what the Baltrop was about. There was the UK out there as well, we heard. So I'll have in the links a PDF that you can download. It's in a foreign language. And so you may have to, if you can get the text, you can go to a DuckDuckGo. I was able to copy and paste sections of 1,000 characters or so, less than 1,000 characters, into the DuckDuckGo. I just put the word translate, and it pops up a little window for you, real convenient. You can just drop text in there. It's not going to do the whole thing, but you can go through the PDF and copy and paste, and you can read the article that way. Or I have for you the link. I found, tracked down the link to the Politiken article. Certainly not be able to read it in English, but some people may have access to the translators online for websites. And you can at least see, again, consistency. The Politiken article's there. The PDF is there in pulling the information together. You look in the margins, you'll see more information. You pull stuff out there. That's how I actually found the link there to the original article. I think it might be partly behind a subscription. I guess get a short-term trial. I don't know. I just wanted to, I confirmed that the stories were through this similar, the RT was consistent. And I think it's such an important story it makes, if you want to listen to NATO, the United States, or Germany, any of the NATO countries, and then look at Ukraine, another genocide going on to the last Ukrainian, and you see how there's a whole lot of international law being broken relative to NATO agreements and mutual defense, where Ukraine isn't, the United States attacking Germany, just because a pipeline goes to Russia. You see that the lack of that energy, and this is what it's about, and then let's go back over to sustainable development, the fossil fuels, the lack of that energy is destroying Germany and all of Europe, in which I've always held that they should have got rid of the EU a long time. They should have never made the EU. The country should have been, again, sovereign in their own little territory, and we wouldn't see a problem. The only problem they would be their feeling that Russia would take them all out. Well, Russia didn't take them out, and Russia knows its limits, it seems, historically. I can't say and speak for the Russians or the people there. They've got a big country. I think they have their own problems. They haven't shown too big a regard of attacking. So if Europe would just get rid of the EU and turn into their countries and just start making the agreements that they had before to keep their economies going, the world wouldn't be going down down the tubes. In fact, I think as we see the production coming up, we're finding out as the arguments this episode were, we don't need the IMF. We don't need the World Bank. We don't need your fiat. We don't need any of that. We'll make our own way, and we'll do it with this production stuff. When we get that all straightened up, we're trading the things that people need, like, first of all, energy. You don't have energy in a modern society, then we're not going to go far. But the attack here on Nord Stream over a politics and over monopolizing energy is a, I don't even know what the words are anymore. I told you, I'm losing my vocabulary for adjectives. It's so beyond. And this leads, the main actor in the world leads it to make these decisions. I don't think anybody in the administration of which thinks about the American people. And I'm not going to get too far off more into what we saw now in the Helene and a lot lesser on the Milton hurricanes. We're watching Americans will step up and defend themselves much, much better, help themselves much, much better. I'm really happy to see the stories since the last episode really coming out to come and help each other, pointing to the fact we don't need the government. I think it has a function. In other words, keeping general public records, I think, is very important. Having a central space that's protected so that all of our records and our titles and things, that kind of stuff, I think, is very important. I don't think it's good enough to say, oh, we'll have to do it ourselves. There's, as we see in Helene spilling her bucket all over the southeast United States, a lot of those, the records probably disappear, even with the government. And that's why it's really important at some level. That's why there's a different government that actually has more records. They talk about the land office for the government. They have records there, too. And I'm not saying it's perfect. What I'm saying, there's some things that sound pretty legitimate. That this country stands for, that this country does different. It is a distinction in the world. But the current administration, and now we're hearing it out of Trump, is going to support nuclear war. The threat, we'll handle the nuclear winter after. Well, that'll surely get rid of climate change, won't it? Global warming. But are we going to like that world? It's totally an irresponsible statement coming out of Trump. And again, Kamal Amin Harris ain't nothing better. Probably far worse. I mean, it has to be far worse. That we are looking at some dire times. I really don't know that I've seen a closer time literal nuclear war could break out. And it's just a couple of people that are in forbearance to take the action that they have already said they have right to take. And I can only appreciate that mentality and those people for that. I may not like a lot of the politics. I've had a couple of people make comments on the BitChute about how I can support this or that. They're not listening to what I'm saying. This is not all or nothing. There are certain things that are principles that we need to hold up everywhere. And then everything's not perfect. And we have a lot to work for, as we saw in this country, United States of America. But you can't even start there because that's really possibly, it looks like to me, wasn't even started the way we think and we're told. It wasn't continued anywhere like we have. You saw, I read, what Judge Napolitano has shown us. The Constitution really doesn't mean much when they sidestepped it and no one stopped the sidestepping. And we need people engaged enough to start finding these things to eliminate, pull them back out, eliminate these laws that and bring a better order back into things that the Supreme Court can't agree with. They can't agree that you can be silenced because, oh, the Patriot, by an agency delegation of agency. I don't think I've ever really heard of anything like that. And yet here we are, and we complain that the government is bad. We allowed it. We trained it. And so this story is important. So much to learn in Nord Stream. What causes countries to exist? The mutual benefit they can do, even if they really don't like each other, they can still work. That's why I highlighted when Putin came in and said, listen, economy is different than politics, even though they're usually commingled. Let's just do business and we can do our business like the space station. We can do science. We can do five things that the United Nations under international law says is neutral. Don't touch it. Don't touch any of this stuff. And we can get along there, and that's fine. Culture, all that stuff. I don't mean the culture. Cancel culture. I'm talking about culture. And we can all respect each other at those five or seven levels. I can't remember what they are. And we can still work together. And you watch the space station working just fine. And you see these nonsense political sides getting in the way of all that. And so this is a very important view. We can look at this. We can take lessons from it. We don't have to completely agree with somebody because we agree with some things. And we don't have to agree or disagree just because we have some view that we don't like. Not everyone is perfect. Not everyone has the view. They're not omnipresent, omniscient. None of us are. And yet there is a few handful of people with undue influence in this country that run through money as well. The House of the Compromise, Congress of the Compromise, that are driving us really very, very close and taking steps to drive us very close to a nuclear holocaust. And worse, we're watching the destruction of this country. Trump comes along and says he can fix it. Well, if you look at what he's doing, he's just undoing the wokeness, but he's not actually fixing anything. And he's only going to be here for 4 years. I'm asking us to look past that. I can agree with Trump if you all will agree that when we look at that and he goes in and he does fix the economy, puts us back a little bit better, like I said he was going to do the first time, we're going to get a breather. And boy, we got that breather. Did it fix it? No. He didn't do anything with the swamp, did none of it. He could have, but he didn't. It told you something. He's going to come back, maybe. Who knows what's going to happen here about the election and all that embarrassment that that's become. People still don't understand they don't vote for a president. I don't get that, but there it is. That we're going into a time we're going to have if he gets in, we may have a breather. Hopefully, he decides when he gets into office, he's not going to allow attacks on Iran relative to nuclear facilities. And we're not going to have to worry about that part. And if we don't, then we have 4 more years of a breather, like he gave us the first time, and it's up to people. I told you then, and we didn't do it. No different than I told you about Comey swindle, and we didn't do it, in large part. That this is going to be an opportunity to get ourselves back together real quick. And we can hope that there's going to be an extension by some new, the Republican Party hasn't changed their positions. Trump hasn't screwed it all up very, very bad. We aren't in nuclear winter. And we'll have a chance to go maybe a few more years in the next president, maybe. Because remember, we're coming up to 2030, and it's already in NATO's playbook that they're going to war in 2030 with Russia. We may not avoid it at all. And that's going to take some people that know how to shut it all down. And the people, as you heard, CBDC may not be inevitable. Now, why? Because you spoke up wherever those Canada, Kyrgyzstan, Australia, and Colombia, the South, right? The global South, the BRICS victim, or potentially so. Again, it goes to that world order. You can just look and see how it's laid out. If we can look and we can see it, can't we make a decision to avoid it? I think we can. And yet we don't get the type of integrity that I see coming out of people when they're pressed down, like we see in North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, Georgia, when they're pressed. That's the only time we start acting. And I think that's a bit of a shame. It's good to see, but it's a bit of a shame. Because we don't realize how oppressed, how catastrophic the current system has become while we walk. And it's not a judgment, and it's not a fault, necessarily, when you didn't have the eyes to see, because they trained you not to see. That's why I've said for a long time, and I don't repeat it too much, I'm kind of condemning my listener. If you study what I do, and you find even half of what I believe is true, and you can find your own truth, and it's the right thing, we are in a bad way that no one understands, and in a way that no one understands. And when you go to take an action, you'll be likely doing the wrong action. You'll be actually doing the action that you were programmed to do when they figured that some people are going to learn, and then they're going to react. This is not a point of reaction. This catastrophe that we can see, the reaction has to come out of the people like in North Carolina, is not the type of reaction that the people can do against what we're facing. But they do have to respond. And I've been advocating this for years. I don't know the total answer. I do know lots of people can see it's their complaint about where the failures happen. And sometimes it's a direct fix, and sometimes it's not a direct fix. Like I said, the attorneys didn't know not to go to the Supreme Court when they did. There's a way to it, but you have to go a certain path. Sometimes you have to defeat the condition so you never get there, is what I advocate, if you can. And I say that and I advocate that because I've been more successful, and success is another code word for me to say neutralized. Because in this corrupt system, completely corrupted system, there is no justice. And that's why I highlight Julian Assange. You're not going to get it. And the best thing we can do until we can get this turned around, given its unrealizable justice, is to at least neutralize the injustice. This is not promoting the system or not. It's saying, you're going to be in a fight. How are you going to make that fight? Are you planning ahead to understand what that fight is and who you're up against? And are you understanding what Julian Assange had to do, and maybe even try to avoid even that, depending on how you respond? In other words, we're back to an obey, the tab I was reading about crypto.com, and they took it back to him immediately. They came back and said, you don't have the authority. That's perfect. Even if they have the authority, you say they don't have the authority. Have a good list of reasons why, and test them anyway. But in this case, I think they're correct, and I just hope the attorneys do it. But this is a challenge. Not many people in the United States, and I see people standing and arguing, but not many people in the United States will challenge official crime. And that's reflected in what we see over there in Palestine. Now in Lebanon, and now in Syria. I don't know if people are paying attention to this. Israel is bombing everything. They call the cancer. When in fact, they're literally, in a historical reference in a Bible, they're the synagogue of Satan. They're those people that call themselves Jews that are not. I read the passages. Just go find them. You don't believe in the Bible? That's not up to me. I'm telling you there's a wisdom that's telling us things. And you can go disqualify that if you want. But I'm seeing when you let that go, when you let that wisdom let go and work in the world, look at what it's doing. Can you at all think about replacing yourself with those people in Lebanon, in Gaza, in Syria, and now coming to Iran? The fortitude of the people in Yemen, he's saying, we're not going to put up with this injustice. And they're firing missiles like left and right. They're taking down an economy, global economy, with their taking out tankers. Do I like to hear it? No. But what are you going to do against evil? What are you going to do about crime? It has to be arrested. That's a duty of every citizen, so-called. I mean that in the neutral, better way than what they've treated us. And so we have a Supreme Court today that says they can impose silence upon you, notwithstanding the First Amendment, as Judge Napolitano stated. You have the right to speech. You have the right to remain silent. And that's supposed to be determined by you. Well, apparently now we're in a country that's not the case. Now we're in a country that hasn't declared, it doesn't have a judiciary that's bold enough or trusteeship enough, trust in trust to the people enough to look back in all the laws that support the decision for the Patriarch and the ability to silence you and look back as even as far as maybe 1883 and say those were all unconstitutional. You can't give anybody in a limited form government, a republic, you can't give anybody an agency, an immunity, a self-reflective accountability. You can't do that. I'm hoping some of these new cases, you know, hopefully crypto.com will be utilizing those if we ever see that paperwork, and that's how they're going to, you're going to start attacking this lineage of administrative usurpation that has drawn this country down, down, down. With all its imperfections, it's drawn it down into a place where it's being dictated from a small cabal of people. We all complain about it, but nobody seems to run and analyze it and then figure out where can they put their stick in the spokes. But it might be that all that you have to do. Find your stick that you're powerful with and stick it in the spokes that's strong enough to break the wheel apart. That's it. And we're getting the tools. And I've been advocating this for years and years, over a decade. I'm not a violent kind of guy. I'm not that way. Never really have been. I don't like the idea of violence. And I'm not just a pacifist, I've told you that. But at some point, we can't, as I said before, the Second Amendment is not something we should use because that meant we failed to avoid having to use it. But to say nothing when we see the worst of atrocities that man can do to man, to be silent, to be silenced, and not have a, and then to be forced into cricketude is a sin. It has to be a sin. And this has been a cricketude busting episode, BTWRLM 598. I hope so. And I'll be with you next week. Tech tips are nature willing.
Echoes call the owl. Clock strikes three, Hal's voice flows like thunder, piercing free. Pull up a chair, lean in close, listens to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, Hal's words ignite, the airwaves burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. Law to liberty, the spectrum light in Hal's. No place to hide a cantaloupe bass, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned, house words ignite, the airways burn. Stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Behind the woodshed, where truths are earned. So mark the time when Sunday comes, behind the woodshed, beating drums. A beacon, fierce and bold, in the fight for truth. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.